Welcome to EMG Transformations with Dan Stoll. Each episode will empower you to ignite your inner fire and provide methods to maximize your mental and physical performance. You never know how one valuable insight can make such a big impact. Please leave a 5-star review if this episode leaves a positive impact on you. And don't be shy to screenshot and share episodes on social media that you find helpful so we can spread the message and make the world a better place. You never know who may need to hear and the impact it has on them too. We're only scratching the surface. There's so much more to learn. Subscribe and stick around to manage stress, improve your health, and create lasting lifestyle changes. Buckle up and get ready to spark your transformation with Nova Fusion.
3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome to EMG Transformations. I'm grateful to feature my buddy, Derek Skoll. Derek's life journey is an adventure of resilience, professional excellence, and adventure. Growing up in Toronto, Derek faced the challenges of ADD, which shaped his unique perspective and drive. He began his career as a comedian, sharing stages with iconic figures. His life-changing experiences across Tasmania and beyond enriched his storytelling, leading him to uncover untold narratives. Professionally, Derek is breaking records in the PR industry. He has built a strong connections with top-tier publications such as Forbes, Entrepreneur, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, USA Today, LA Weekly, and Bloomberg. Today, Derek is the founder of Grateful PR, a heart-centered agency grounded in gratitude and known for its authenticity and integrity. Grateful PR excels in securing premier media coverage and is led by Derek's commitment to ensuring that every story is shared with honesty and impact, driving visibility, credibility, and traffic for clients. Derek embodies creativity, connection, and authenticity, making a significant mark in the PR world and a great guest for today's show. Thank you so much for joining us today, Derek.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan. I really appreciate the introduction. It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course, man. We always just rip it off every time. And I think we initially connected on LinkedIn, but, you know, from our first call, there's just been this explosion of, you know, synergy and alignment between our conversations. And it's just been flowing ever since. So don't see that stopping today. And I'm just super grateful for our friendship and, you know, for the opportunity to dive deeper into your story today.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, every time we talk, I'm like, why aren't we recording? This is gold, you know, but it'll just continue to happen. We have a great conversation every single time, and I'm just super grateful to be here, and I'm excited.
Likewise, man. And, you know, I would actually love to just, you know, dive into your backstory here, because, you know, we've talked about it a little offline, but I want to go deeper here today. And, you know, specifically some of those, you know, starting with your backstory so we understand where you're coming from, but then if you don't mind transitioning into those pivotal experiences and, you know, struggles even that shaped you and ultimately directed you down the path that you're walking today.
Yeah, sounds great. Let's do it. Appreciate the question. And yeah, I was born here in Toronto, and it's funny, here in Toronto, We don't like pronouncing T's when they're in the middle of words. So we just call it Toronto. It just kind of rolls off the tongue, and Toronto. But anyways, and I'm sporting my Toronto Maple Leafs jersey right now. I'm a diehard. So it's a difficult team to love. But anyways, you know, I was born here 1985 on a cool and rainy Friday the 13th. And it ended up being a lucky, very lucky day for me. And grateful that I'm back here with family right now. But yeah, as a young person, definitely was rambunctious, running around, scraping my knees, breaking my collarbone, doing crazy stuff at the jungle gyms. And I think early on, you know, teachers, parents, probably my parents were like, what is wrong with this kid? You know, like, he just has so much energy. He can't seem to settle down. And while my mom always reminds me how I picked up sports and riding a bike, like months and months before most other kids. And I was very talented with music at a young age, you know, playing the guitar and drums and piano and harmonica, just goofing around. But I picked it up pretty quickly. I mean, also my father is a professional musician and, you know, he was playing with the, well, many different things, including Aretha Franklin on tour with her for a short time, which is pretty awesome. And the Phantom of the Opera. So it was really cool growing up in Toronto and being able to go downtown to the theater where Les Miserables and Phantom of the Opera were playing. And I was down there in the musician's pit. Really cool. And that really turned me on to music. But, you know, getting back to my rambunctiousness, you know, pretty quickly as a young child, I was, you know, sent to a doctor to say, to get us an opinion, I guess, or a diagnosis on like, why do I have so much more energy than the other kids? Why is it so hard for me to concentrate and stay seated in class? You know, and they diagnosed me with ADD. And not long thereafter, I was put on Ritalin. And so, you know, taking pharmaceuticals every day, started to feel like a shell of myself. You know, I had no appetite. I didn't really feel like I was authentically myself. I just kind of sat there, you know, disengaged. And that did not feel normal, although it shut me up. And I guess, you know, that was the point. So I guess my grades got a little better, whatever the grades look like when you're in, you know, grade 2 and 3 and 4. Right. But yeah, so that kind of was, you know, I was struggling with that identity as a young child and, you know, having to take medication. I felt, you know, like there was something wrong with me or something. And, but, you know, still had fun. And after a while decided that I was going to stop taking that stuff on my own. And I give myself a massive pat on the back now looking back because I had that level of awareness just intuitively, I think, that it just wasn't right for me regardless. You know, I just needed to find a way to cope or learn to use my ADD, if we want to call it that, as a superpower and not a hindrance or something that was holding me back. So once I stepped into that intuitively, I think, you know, everything got better. I got, you know, joining sports teams. I was, you know, hanging out with probably the wrong people, but also some of the right people who I'm still friends with today. And I'm back here visiting family right now and still really close with some old friends, which is really cool. Anyway, you know, got into drama, got into acting, got into music, and that's where my ADD really allowed me, I think, to shine more and have more fun and be myself. And so that kind of, I think, really shaped who I was becoming and getting involved in productions and events and stuff like that, school council, like setting up, you know, really fun things at school and the video program, editing video, and got into that. And then eventually got accepted into a comedy college. So it was very new at the time. And I was one of 500 people that applied or did an audition. And I was one of, I guess it was about 40 people that got accepted out of 500. So pretty proud of myself for that. And through that experience, I got to meet a lot of famous comedians, actors, got to share the stage with some really incredible people, some of whom I was, you know, really inspired by as a kid and still am. And they're still around, some of them, not all. Yeah. And that led me to, you know, filming a documentary in Tasmania and kind of following a life of service, music, the arts, like acting and so on. And also stepping into this more recent passion where I love to see other people step into their unique abilities and their passions in the arts, acting, music, whatever it is. And that's why I just love what I do with Grateful PR and, you know, giving my clients an opportunity to feel the limelight and shine.
Well, that's an incredible story. And one thing that really sticks out to me is you had that awareness to get off of the medication with the ADD yourself. And, one of my initial questions is like, well, how did you end up flipping that into your superpower? But then you were talking about, getting into the music scene, getting into the comedy scene. It's almost like to me that switch of environment is, matching, what's most in alignment with you and your interest. And so you can capitalize on that strong energy that you do have. And so was it as simple as like flipping the environments to really start tapping into that superpower, or was there something more to it?
It's a really good question. Certainly getting off the drugs was the most important thing as I look back. My friends at the time, not many of them shared the same passions that I did with music and the arts. But when I left high school was when that really got supercharged. Going to that comedy program. And I think I was like, what, I can't remember now, 20 or 21 or something like that. 20, 19. Anyways, the point is those people were insane. Perfect match for me. And I'm still very close with a lot of them as well. They're just, and some of them are on, I just saw one of my friends from the program on Jimmy Kimmel, what's the other one that's, yeah, Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah,
The other
Fallon.
day, and I'm just so happy for them. And there's a few others that have shows on Netflix or Crave or Amazon. And I'm just, it was such an amazing experience to be with them during that time. And that was the opportunity. And like moving downtown and spending most of my time downtown Toronto and doing stand-up circuits with Yuck Yucks in different places like that, and bumping into people and legends. And that was a, yeah. So to answer your question, more directly, yeah, I think that changing your environment really allowed me to step into this new version of myself that was like totally accepted, in my weirdness and my authentic, exploration of what comedy meant to me, what I thought was funny. It wasn't always what everyone thought was funny. I certainly bombed just as many times as I killed it, on the stage. So, but that was important, for learning what my groove is and what my style is. And as I'm sure we'll talk about, when you bomb in life or fail or have something painful happen, there's so much growth in that. So yeah, it was re that was yeah, the change of environment definitely helped me step into who I was becoming.
Yeah. And honestly, I didn't know you were a comedian until I was really prepping for this podcast. I was like, oh, well, that actually does make a bit sense now that I know you. But I'm thinking about overcoming adversity, and life strikes unexpectedly all the time. And like you said, like those bombs, they actually help prepare you for when life does strike. And that's the whole theme of this conversation: experiences plus mindset equals growth. And you have to go through those experiences where you're failing, you're making mistakes, so you can learn and grow. And one of my questions here is, how has comedy, sharpened your skills to be adaptable and resilient, in that whole life stage now beyond comedy?
The harder you bomb, the harder your shell, on the outside. The more times you bomb, the less of a hit you feel when something like that happens to you, whether it's on stage or in life. Because I have bombed pretty bad. Like, you think about stepping out there and doing something you thought would be really funny and just crickets. Is all you hear. And there were times where I was like, I guess I'm not cut out for this. I guess I'm not very funny, but I've been making people laugh my whole life. But stand-up comedy is, I got, oh my God, did I ever get humbled? And that's important, I think, to answer your question too. Like, to be humbled, like, my God, did I ever have a giant ego? And I still, struggle with taming my ego. And but back then I thought I was the funniest guy that I knew. I still kind of think that sometimes, but But I thought I would just get up on stage like a natural and just make everyone laugh. And I remember walking up there not prepping at all, not having anything planned, and just going up there and just thinking I was just going to make everyone laugh. And I had no idea that, you know, there's a whole process of setting up your joke and the rule of three, a comedic pause, a long stare, allowing there to be some dead air to build toward the punchline, callbacks. There's all these little tricks and things, that little nuances within stand-up comedy and within life that, yeah, if you're just going to talk just to fill space because you're anxious or you think you're so funny because your ego is inflated, you might not get the result you want and you might just hear crickets. And then what's that going to do? That's going to humble you. And I certainly got humbled. So I think that comedy really humbled me and made me more resilient to things that just don't go my way sometimes, right? Getting told no, getting told you suck, you know, or something. But am I going to internalize that and let that become me? Or am I going to let it go and maybe hopefully learn something and sharpen my tools and get back in there? You know, so that's what I did. And I think I had a real good run. I haven't gone up on stage like that in a number of years now, but feeling a calling to come out of retirement and go on a bit of a circuit. So, and I think I'm like, here I am with the ego again. I think I'd kill it. I really do. I think I'd go up there. I've learned so much, you know, but only through the pain and discomfort and bombing and being told no and broken hearts and letdowns and all those things that I think has now better prepared me for not just stage presence and comedy, but like you name it, anything in life it's good for.
Yeah, I love it. And you know, we're saying it now, Derek's comeback to comedy is starting now. On tour, he's coming. look out everybody. But I'm sure that will be amazing, and I'm actually really interested. And if you're ever doing some shows around here, I'm only a 4-hour drive to Toronto, so let me know for sure, and that'd be a cool opportunity for us to meet up as well.
In person, yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah. I'm not here that often, but a few times a year to visit. And yeah, I'm putting this into the universe now. I will do stand-up comedy in 2024. I know there's a lot of time left, but I'm saying it out there right now. I will do comedy at least, all right, fine. At least two shows. I was going to say one, at least two. I'm going to double it. At least two.
My man, this is what it takes. Taking inspired action live on the podcast. You know, that's what it takes to be successful, guys. I love it.
I said it here first. I made a declaration, and my integrity means a lot to me. So you can hold me accountable, Dan.
I will. Yeah. And one of the things I saw in your core values is integrity and also resilience. And, you know, I'm curious, like, where's the resilience came into play in your life? And like, why is that so important to make it a core value of yours?
Oh my God, I love resilience. I think, you know, I've spoken into it a little bit, but everything from, you know, the comedy background to feeling like I wasn't good enough in you know, grade school, all the way up, even through comedy, college. Then I went back to college for sales and marketing management, and I felt so out of place. I was like, oh my God, who are all these stiffs, you know, squares? And I had to, again, you know, sort out my ego and learn and, you know, get the, I don't know what it's called, a diploma, a certificate. What's a college thing called? Anyway, it shows, you know, how much it did. No, I learned a lot, but resilience. I love it because I have so much respect for people that are going through something really hard, you know, and it's such a challenge for me. I used to be a kind of know-it-all, especially when I first started doing personal development work. It blew my mind. It really opened up a whole new world for me of of development, of growth, of awareness. And I wanted to share that with other people, and I couldn't stop talking about it, but I think I bored the hell out of like a lot of my friends are like, okay, easy guru skull, like, you know, take a step back here, you know? And I realized, you know, and I'm still learning this, that, you know, you can't just slide a book under your friends or your loved one's pillow of personal development or something, you know? You can't just push it on someone. They really have to be ready for, you know, they really have to ask for help. You can't just go and push it onto someone or just give them your opinion unannounced or on a, you know, unsolicited advice and so on. And that was hard for me because, you know, I've suffered a couple of broken hearts, you know, in the last number of years and resiliency. So waking up in the morning and, you know, feeling like I needed to, you know, meditate, journal, go for a long walk, go to the gym, you know, call your mom, call your grandma, you know, do the work, breath work, you know, whatever it is. And it was hard, so hard. It's still hard sometimes, you know, you wake up, you don't want to sit there with yourself for 10 or 15 minutes. You know, you've got too much on your mind. You feel like you've got too much on your plate. You've got a broken heart. It's hard to breathe. And at one point I worked with the girl that, you know, I had this broken heart with, and man, was that ever hard. And I was in the restaurant business years ago, and I had to go into work as a manager for this restaurant. And seeing her there, and there's a guy that's, you know, may or may not be involved with that girl at the time. And it's just like the most awkward, like heart-wrenching thing. And at least it was for me, but I had to be resilient to go in there, be stoic, not like, you know, pretend like there's not, but I kind of did have to pretend nothing was wrong, but, you know, but taking care of myself, and it really did push me through. And it like, if I wasn't put in that position and I didn't have those difficult conversations, difficult situations, I wouldn't be nearly as resilient as I am now to things that just don't go my way. And now when things don't go my way, yeah, it sucks, but I can let it go, you know, pretty quickly for the most part. And I know that everything serves me. The universe conspires in my favor, whether I recognize that at the time or not. I just now know that it will serve me, even if it's comes in all different shapes and forms and colors. It serves me. And so I might learn the reason why in a year or two from now, or I may not ever, but I just have to have the faith that it has got my back. And that was through resilience, through pain, heartbreak, you know, loss of loved ones, you know, it really set me up ultimately for, yeah, being able to just breathe through situations and let things go and just have faith. So yeah, love resilience.
Yeah, it's honestly one of my core pillars as well. And, you know, there's so much alignment between us, but you just dropped some really powerful information there. And, you know, starting with, you know, when we get into the personal development, it's like we're so excited to share all this information, and it's like we're almost like vomiting all of this personal development onto the other people in our life. But like you said, is like they have to be ready to take that action, and you know, we can't necessarily force that or bring that onto them. Like they have to be ready and they have to make that decision, and ultimately they have to do the work. We can be here to guide them and, you know, be there for support, but we can't take that step for them. And you know, I know that's a hard thing for a lot of people. It's like, if they were to only do this one thing, like their life would be so much better. But, you know, they have to make that choice and decision on their own. So that's a really important piece that I've also learning. It's like, you know, I want to help as many people as I can. It's like sometimes, you know, people have to help themselves, and you can be there when they're ready and just extend that invitation. But, you know, until they're ready to accept it and move with you, you know, things may be closer to the same. But, you know, talking about heartbreak, you know, that's something that we have both been through our seasons of heartbreaks here. And that was actually one of the biggest blessings for me in the long run, like looking back at it. And, That's really how I view adversity now. Like when life does strike, what's this trying to prepare me for? That's always the first question I start asking myself because I was asking, like, what did I do to deserve this? I was stuck in this victim mentality. And, you're just looking for problems and you're going to get more problems at that point. But when you start being more solution oriented and solution focused, that's where it's like you can find the opportunities and the pain and turn that adversity into your advantage. So, I'm curious with you and, those seasons of heartbreak, what did you learn from that time? And, what did you start doing differently for you afterwards? Like, how did you start putting yourself first and taking that action?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I just wanted to start by saying that you really touched on something that I don't want to skip because I was so inspired by hearing it. Like, when different mentors or coaches or leaders or podcasters or psychologists or whatever say something, it doesn't always click for everyone, right? Like, but one person said something that really clicked for me, and I'll just take 10 seconds to say this one. I don't know if it was Mark Groves or if it was Terry Real, but one of those two, it might have been Terry Real on the Mark Groves show, I think that was. But he said, you got to really let somebody feel the bottom, to really like scrape along the bottom. It sucks. It's painful. It hurts. You hate to see somebody suffer and go through that pain. And a lot of us, a lot of people, a lot of recovering codependent people, like myself, we want to support people. We want to help them. We want to pick them up. And I'd rather put them on my back and scrape the bottom for them so they don't have to suffer and feel the same pain I felt, because it was hard getting myself out of bed every day. But it's that pain of scraping the bottom where you need to feel that as fuel and power to push yourself out of that situation. And you have to do it on your own. You can ask for help, and we're here to help pull, support you, prop you up a bit, but you got to feel the pain. And it just has to happen organically. And when I realized that, so now into your question, I think when these things happen to me and how it's shaped me now, looking back, is that, it was the pain of feeling the bottom that, yes, I look back on now and I'm like, I needed that. I needed that kick in my butt. I needed to feel the scrapes along my stomach and back and sides as I was scraping along. I picture like this disgusting bottom of the ocean floor. Like there's just all this crap, but you almost need to feel all of that. So now, when and I'm in a beautiful relationship now, and actually, funny thing, I used to think that, oh, I'll be with this person again. She just needs to figure it out and everything. And we did have a number of seasons where we like got back together again for a little while, but we didn't have the amount of difficult conversations that we needed to. I didn't fully step into who I was and honor myself and honor my boundaries and even place firm boundaries down and have the integrity and the backbone or whatever, to stand for my boundaries and say enough's enough. Like I've told you about my boundary, you agreed, and you've crossed it again. I'm gone, right? And I did honor myself a few times, but we kept revisiting. And the weird, funny thing is when I finally, this was the aha moment for me, when I finally said, I'm done, and I choose me. I love myself too much to be stepped on or disrespected or dishonored. I love myself too much, and I'm now in a place where I'm very optimistic and excited about where I'm going and what I'm building. At that point, I had the blinders on, and I was just Derek Skoll all the way. and my passions and my opportunities that were coming toward me, I was feeling it and I was in the zone and I was like, nobody, nothing is ever going to stand in my way of my target and where I'm going ever again. And when I fully stepped into that, it's amazing who starts coming out of the woodwork, you know, trying to get back in your life, or just even new people, like aligned people, right? They start gravitating toward you, magnetizing toward you. And that, I'm getting chills just thinking about it, because that's it. Like, energy is pulsing through my hair. My hairs are standing up, because that's for me, that was the big difference maker. When I stood for myself and honored myself at that level, that was powerful. And the right people, I feel like, were starting to appear in my life, magnetizing toward me. And before I knew it, I was at a Dr. Joe Dispenza week-long meditation retreat, met Dr. Joe, shook his hand, chatted with him a little bit, connected with unbelievable people who are still going to be like lifelong friends now, colleagues, partners, clients, and just never looked back. And so I'm really proud of that. So that for me was the big switch.
Yeah. No, I love
But you that. Can't, sorry to interrupt, but you can't just sort of fake it. You know, you can't, because so many people are so good at talking the talk, right? They've read all the books and they talk the talk. But if you don't put those words into action, then those old patterns will continue to repeat themselves until you, with conviction and an authenticity, move forward on your own path, regardless of what anyone says or does to you. And only then will you really be in the sweet spot, as I like to call it.
Yeah. My favorite part is that, like, you made that decision that you needed to start putting yourself first, and you started walking the talk. And, you know, without doing that, you know, the results don't happen. The transformation doesn't happen. You end up staying stuck in that same spot. But that's why I have so much respect for you, is because you had to pull yourself out of the trenches and, you know, build yourself back up. And it's almost like, when I say back up, it's like when we go through significant adversity, typically we're never going to be the same person that we were before that. And that's this new realization that I've having with myself, my story, and also these other people that went through adversity, is like, we want to just be that old version of ourselves so bad that, you know, we lose sight of who we're becoming. And when we're focusing on the past, it's like we can't even look at the future and like start creating. We're just like in this negative like suck hole at the end of the day. So like when we can start like shifting our perspective to look in the future and start, you know, taking these steps forward, celebrating the small wins, smelling the roses on the way there and enjoying the process, you know, that's where all this, you know, manifestation, like, you know, that's where it comes into play. But it doesn't happen without the work. Everyone just wants to think good thoughts and visualize, but, you know, then you got to take that next step. And that's where a lot of people get left behind. But for me,
absolutely,
it's like I shared this this blog of the first 4 years of my health journey, when I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and, you know, having my entire colon removed. And I just did that from a deep sense of empathy to help other people in similar situations. And, you know, that was the most vulnerable and, you know, scary thing that I could share and put out into the world, the most insecure thing that, you know, I felt about myself. But I came to this realization that it wasn't about me anymore. It was about helping that one person if I could. And, you know, that's what really fuels me to keep going and, you know, just continue to make this positive impact. Because when I was in the children's hospital at 17, you know, I saw these kids that were half my age and much younger and worse conditions, frankly. And I was like, well, if they have to go through this for years, you know, like, you know, I gotta put my message out there. I gotta help. I gotta do something here. So I just had this moral obligation and calling from within. And it really just stems from a deep place of empathy. Like, if I could say one word, empathy is the thing that really drives me. So for you, I'm curious, like, where does your will and your inner fire to make that positive impact come from?
You know, I thank you for sharing that. And your story is incredible. Really extremely inspiring. And I wonder if we'll touch more on that. But, you know, for me, it was, you know what? I had a really powerful experience when I actually went to New York City for a week, or rather it was a weekend intensive relationship course, I guess, with Terry Real. I think he's a doctor, Dr. Terry Real. He's unbelievable, by the way. If you've never checked out Terry Real, he's awesome. But he, you know, we did a an inner child exercise. And, you know, I've heard other people doing it. You know, I don't think he developed it, but where you write a letter to your inner child, your seven-year-old self, whenever that was, when you can think back and feel like, where was it that you got told that you weren't good enough? When was it, you know, when you felt that you couldn't do something, or someone said something that really hurt you, or whatever. And, you know, these things often happen to us around 5, 7 years old or something around there. And I could pinpoint a few things, you know, in my past that, that, you know, really did kind of like, because we're not born not believing in ourselves. You know, we're not born thinking we can't do it or whatever. It's kind of put on us by our adult or the people that are around us that we're influenced by. And again, not to take the victim mentality, but this is the point of the exercise, is writing down what happened and then saying, that happened. That's a fact. But now I'm, at the time I was maybe 34 or 35, 33 or something. I'm 38 now. And, you know, and now here is who I am. This is what I'm doing. This is what my goals are. I see you, seven-year-old Derek, you know, and I feel you and I have empathy for you. And I remember that feeling, you know, and that wasn't okay. But we are 33 or 34 now, you know, we're an adult and we know where we're going. We have a path, we have a vision, we have passions. And while I am so sorry that happened, I have so much empathy and compassion for my inner child, but now I'm in the driver's seat, you know, and I'm going to ask my inner child to unbuckle himself from the driver's seat. I'm going to put you in the back seat. I'm going to put my arm around you and give you a big hug. I'm going to say, I've got you now. I've got you. And buckle up, because big Derek's driving now, you know, and I'm in the driver's seat. I'm going to take care of you, you know, and put him behind you and just be like, I'm going to protect you. And that's never going to happen to you again, you know? And I'm still getting the chills again, because I was deep into that exercise. I really took it seriously. And I had like tears streaming down my face, and it was powerful. And actually, thanks for bringing that up, because I haven't connected with that feeling in a little while. You know, it's important actually to go back and revisit some of these moments, right? Like that was a big moment for me. And so I had empathy for myself. And I think that's so important, right? But then to not let that hold you back in the victim state, to just say, I hear you and that wasn't okay, but I got you now. And we're going to go forward and I'm going to protect you moving forward. You know, that was huge for me.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I've heard about the inner child stories as well, but when you peel back the layers like that and you really, you know, just give yourself that hug, put yourself in the back seat. And it's like, I got you. I'm in the driver's seat now. And it's almost like your kid, but it's like yourself, like having that type of relationship. That's what I'm envisioning. And if, like, I'm not a dad by any means right now, but you know, if I were a dad, like I would be doing anything I could to protect my kid, make sure they're in a good position, help them grow. They have to go through the failures, but you know, like help them navigate through it. And, it's the same situation. It's like, you know, just envision like the younger self is like your kid and just do all those right things that would help them grow. And it's just like, you're in the driver's seat now. So it's like, what would you do? And,
right.
You know, it's like, it's taking the power back. That's how I visualize it. It's like you were powerless at one point in your life. You were small, you were weak. You weren't able to really vocalize and communicate the way you wanted to, but now you can. So instead of, you know, dragging about the past again. It's like, what can we do moving forward? How can I embody the true, authentic, vulnerable version of myself? And, you know, if some people don't like it, that's fine. If some people do, that's fine. Like, that's something that I learned. It's like, you can try and fit in with the crowd and be one way. People are still going to hate you. But if you be your authentic self, you know, you're going to attract certain people that are in alignment, and you're still going to have people that don't like you. So either way, it's like, would you rather be in alignment or not in alignment, and going home and just like, why did I do that? Like, I don't even like these people. I don't like these conversations. Like, I feel negative every time I'm around these people. Why do I keep doing that rather than just living an authentic life and loving yourself first? So, man, that's really powerful. I know that the Absolutely. Listeners are definitely, someone out there is going to need to hear that. You know, I'm sure I can, you know, revisit that myself and, you know, take some nuggets from there as well. But transitioning here, you know, I know that you do a lot of inner work, and, you know, we can take this one of two ways, actually. So I'm really interested to learn more about, you know, your experiences with plant medicine or also energy healing. So if you have like a good story on either of those topics, I'd love to, you know, just get your unique perspective in those areas. Dr. Doug's offers the best organic topical balms for protecting, healing, and restoring your skin and life. Just twist off a cap, apply like lotion, and get ready to feel outstanding. My favorite products are the magnesium balm for headaches and recovery balm for coaching basketball or training for a Spartan race. But that's not all. It started with Dr. Doug's original Miracle Balm, a rejuvenating balm fueled with all organic ingredients, including beeswax, extra virgin olive oil, extra virgin coconut oil, shea butter, peppermint and lavender essential oils, and vitamin E. This one-of-a-kind solution is designed to tackle an array of skin concerns such as itchy dry skin, eczema, any rashy irritated areas, and much more. Now, if you're bright and pasty like me, you may want to consider their Miracle Balm plus zinc as a natural sunscreen to keep you from frying up without any harmful SPF chemicals that are linked to cancer. Now, do you hate bugs? Me too, but we got you. Try Dr. Doug's Bug Potion to repel bugs, relieve itchy bites, and kill bacteria so you can enjoy the great outdoors once again. There is truly something for everybody, including that little one in your life who is trying to tell you to get Dr. Doug's baby balm for their bum right now. And here's your chance. Click the link in our show notes now to enhance your life with Dr. Doug's balms and get extra to share with those who you care about. Take back your power and feel outstanding with Dr. Doug's natural balms.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'm totally in alignment with what you said about, you know, thinking about our inner child and through that exercise is like your son, because that's exactly how I feel about it too. And I'm not a dad yet either, but, that's how I feel also, you know, like we would protect our child, son or daughter, whatever, with everything, you know, with, so yeah, I really align with you on that. Yeah. Plant medicine. Wow. Well, it always sort of spoke to me. I knew a couple of people that had done ayahuasca in the past, and I went, wow, that sounds intense. That sounds like something that I feel like I could handle, but at the same time, it's super scary. Like, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I hear all this woo-woo stuff about ayahuasca, like, you know, the plant medicine, she is going to share with you and tell you what you need to know. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, is someone talking to you? Like, she's going to show you what you need and she will call you when your time is ready. And I don't know if I got the calling, but I went to Peru and I was on the Amazon and I'm doing ayahuasca and cambo, which is a frog poison that is burned into your skin, basically. Oh, wow. And it just makes you feel like you're going to die for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes and like the worst fever, the worst hangover, I should say the worst hangover of your life, and your vomit and everything. But the weirdest thing was in Peru on the Amazon with pink dolphins, you know, you could hear them splashing around, at night or even during the day, but it was super cool. But get this, nothing really happened to me. And the shaman was like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, I even took I did the ayahuasca diet. I took it seriously, abstained from all the things, sex, everything, followed the Peruvian ayahuasca diet. Nothing happened. I lost an hour and a half of time. That was weird. But, you know, other than that, I was coherent. I was awake. And the shaman was like baffled and bewildered. He had no idea. And I had an interpreter there like saying, yeah, like, we don't know what's wrong with you. But I was in a very good place at that time, emotionally, energetically. And he said, like, maybe there's just nothing for you right now. And I said, okay. So fast forward to not that long ago, like a few months ago or something, I was in just outside of Medellin, Colombia, and where I love to spend quite a bit of time every year when it's not the Canadian winter or American winter. When I'm between Canada and the States, I will fly down to Colombia. I also sometimes Costa Rica, Mexico, whatever. But the point is I've got a great... Actually, yes, I got this hat in Mexico at a... Awesome. Look at it disappear. I got this hat. It's a... like Indiana Jones style hat from just outside of a temple called Palenque in Chiapas, Mexico, which I'm a huge history and ancient civilization nerd. Like, we need to talk about that like later, but whatever. But yeah, so there I am, and I met some really amazing people. Domo Caraca is the facility, I guess you could call it that, and Juan Pablo in just outside of Medellin, he's unbelievable. And for any listeners, you can message me and find out about Juan Pablo, but he was perfect for me and for a lot of people that I knew. And we went up there to his little ranch, and it's beautiful, serene. You're in this kind of rainforest, but it's a ranch, and it's peaceful, it's quiet, tranquil. And it was the right environment for me. I didn't do the crazy diet, just a few little things. No caffeine for the 48 hours, and no pork for 48 hours kind of before. Whether or not that's true or has any energetic, you know, meaning or not, I did it. And I did ayahuasca. I also did cambo again. And lo and behold, and there were some things that came up for me, did the cambo first. So cambo burned into your skin. It was a ceremony. We sat in this beautiful thing in a circle, vomited for about 15, 20 minutes. You're chugging water, you're vomiting, call it purging. And apparently every color of your purge means something different. And I had a lot of yellow in mine, kind of gross. Sorry, listeners, but this is what you can expect if you try this. And yellow means fear or sadness. And I did have some sadness and some fear, actually. I just lost my second grandmother, my family dog, who was 15, you know, so that's a long run for a golden retriever. And, you know, I was feeling sadness and some fear, I guess, with other things. And so that made a lot of sense. And then we did bufo. Now, bufo is a toad poison. It's a toad from Mexico. And they get the poison from it, massage it out, and you smoke it. And it's like pure DMT, which is like the God molecule, some people call it. Apparently our bodies are flooded with DMT when we're born, and we're flooded with DMT when we die. and you can smoke it. And so, you know, I went in there and I was very kind of like nervous, very nervous. And, you know, here I was trying to find every detail, talking to different people around that have done it. And a very good friend of mine, Reggie Tanzola, he said, "Derek, just go into it. You don't need to know everything. You know, because, you know, one person has one experience, another person has a totally different experience. Don't let it impact your experience is unique to you." He's an amazing mentor, a great friend of mine. I'll be seeing him soon in Vancouver as well. But he told me that, and I went in and I smoked this Bufo, and my God, I mean, it is like, I felt like all of a sudden, not like I died in a bad way. It sounds weird. It's almost like you just disappear. You disappear and you lie down on this pillow. And I had Wampa there and I could feel his presence. And he was waving like eagle feathers and dried tobacco leaves. And as I felt the intensity of this presence of like everything, it was just everything, no time, no space, everybody and everything was connected. I had no eyes, no ears, no mouth, no senses. But everything to me was kind of white and orange and beautiful. And I felt connected to everything. And it was hard to let go. Like you feel yourself like saying, "I'm still Derek Skoll. I'm still Derek Skoll. I'm in Medellin, Colombia. I'm laying on the grass. Like, am I breathing? I don't know." And I just, but the thing is, you really got to release. And it allows you, or it invites you to surrender. And that's everyone's advice. Just fully surrender. And you will be okay, you know, but let whatever comes up for you come up. And it was the most incredible experience I have ever had. I do believe now, having experienced that, in my heart, that's where I think, like, if you believe in heaven or whatever, I'm pretty sure that's like what heaven is, or, you know, it's something like that. It's beautiful, super connected. It was unbelievable. And I felt ancient history, ancient knowledge. I felt it was incredible. So that was that. It lasts for like 10 or 15 minutes, but you've got no idea what time is when that's happening. And you come out of it and there are loads of people around that are there to support you. And you just want to hug everybody. When you come out of there, you want to go and I hugged a tree. I like felt the grass. I was looking at the birds. There was a little dog running around. I was like, "Oh, Chewy," like, everything was so beautiful. I'm like, "Oh my God, look at where we live." So people say Bufo is an ego killer. And I agree. It just totally melts your ego away and just lets you appreciate everything, every leaf, every bee, every flower. You know, like you said, smell the roses. Like, I wanted to stop and smell every single flower, because here on Earth, we have got this unbelievable opportunity to experience all of our senses, you know, and sometimes we lose grasp of the power in that, you know, like this opportunity that we have, that a lot of us, including me on some days, we're just wasting. You know, you wake up late, you get hammered, wake up at, you know, 2 in the afternoon, you eat like shit, you know, don't take care of yourself. It's like, man, we should be like super grateful for everything that we have. Like, whenever you're feeling down, just, I don't know, like, there's so much beauty out there. Just go and connect with someone, go roll in the grass, do some earthing, you know, do some grounding. And then after that, this is the trifecta. Everyone thought I was insane. And I still think I was pretty insane for doing this. So then after that, several hours after, I did ayahuasca. So this is 3 in 1 day. And the ayahuasca, and I had this pounding headache, probably from the purging, like I'm a bad puker. Like, you don't want to be around me when I'm doing that. But God bless everyone that was there that had to hear that. But everyone was doing it, so you felt not judged or anything. In any case, then the ayahuasca, and then some real heavy stuff started coming up for me. Like, it was just, all I can say is, for me, it was a lot of information, and it was so much information that it was trying to tell me. And now I get it. What is she trying to show me? There was so much that I needed to learn about myself, about the world, about how I communicate with people, like how I'm anxious about certain things, or I fear certain things, or I doubt myself, or I have an inflated ego sometimes, or whatever. And for me, it was challenging to grab one thing that I was being shown and analyze it and look at it. And that was really, really challenging for me. And now I understand why people do, like, they recommend do at least three, usually odd numbers, three ceremonies spaced out usually by a day in between, or you could do every day, I guess, but I think it's usually every other day, minimum three, but a lot of people do five, seven. There are even, you could look on the internet, you could see like a 6 month ayahuasca retreat. Like some people have PTSD from war, from different things like that in life, first responders. And there were a few there that I connected with as well. And this is, has done unbelievable things for their personal growth and getting rid of some, or, you know, coping with really difficult things. So I'm a big proponent of it. I'm a big believer in it. I think that, you know, not everyone is ready for that kind of thing. But, you know, be open to it, because I've now done ayahuasca a few times since then. And every time I'm able to uncover a little bit more, it's a little bit less intense, and I'm able to open more things and have more downloads and understand more about myself. So yeah, that's been my experience with plant medicine.
Man, that's just really fascinating for me. I feel like I'm an old soul. So, you know, like I've known about ayahuasca, and, you know, you said the bofu, or the, however Bufo. That's called, bufo. Is that like the Colorado toad as well?
Yeah, probably that could be. Yeah, because I think it's northern Mexico into probably, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, maybe even southern Colorado. I'm not too sure its range, but yeah, okay. Somewhere around there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've known about the ayahuasca and stuff since I was like a young teenager. Like I'm 25 now. It's something that like I've always just felt like drawn to, like the ancient civilizations that you've mentioned, like all of that stuff. I really just like, it just calls to me, like even quantum physics, like all this, you know, interesting stuff. But for the toad, like I hear Mike Tyson talking about that all the time on his podcast. And he says exactly, it's like you smoke it, it's the pure DMT. It's like 10 to 15 minutes, but it feels like you're dying. And like, yeah. I don't know why, but it's like, it sounds crazy, but I really want to do it. I just feel like there's something in there for me. So just hearing your experience, it just makes me want to do it even more. And, you know, it's something that's definitely on the horizon in the next few years for me, if I can, you know, find a good spot to do it. But, yeah, I find this stuff so fascinating, and it's cool to know someone that's like experienced and knows connections in this space. So, you know, I might be hitting you up for that, and maybe some of the listeners as well.
Well, Dan, I'll tell you that it looks like we're going to be bringing Juan Pablo up to Canada later this summer. Oh. And probably in either Vernon, BC or Calgary, Alberta, somewhere around the two of those places. So I'll let you know, because we're looking for anyone who's feeling called to it, a small number, obviously, but friends of us, of ours, that would be in alignment to want to experience something like this. We're going to fly Juan Pablo up here. He was actually just in the United States last week or the last couple of weeks. He did a little tour. He was in Tennessee. He went to Colorado, and he did a little tour of different people, you know, hiring him to come to their retreats and do his thing. He's becoming quite popular, and I can't say enough good things about him. He just makes me feel very comfortable. And he explains things. He speaks English and French Spanish. Spanish is his first language, but I think he grew up in Miami for a little while when he was a kid. So he's got that kind of American vibe to him. But he's learned from some amazing teachers that are much older than him, because he's quite young. I mean, I think he's probably around my age, 38 or something. But he's a very old soul. He's very stoic. He's got this very intense look to him, but he's like very gentle and kind person. I can't say enough good things. So yeah, I'll let you know if and when he's coming up, but he should be later this summer.
Yeah, that'd be incredible, man. And look forward to doing more things like that as well. And as we begin to wrap up here, it's like we've been just cranking through this as always with our conversations. I love that. But I'm mixing up the closing sequence today as we start to wrap up because I want to personally know more about your documentary that's coming up, Walk Like a
Awesome.
Giant. So if you could just give us a little preview of what that's going to be like.
Sure, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. This is a passion project that has been going on now for quite a long time. Like we said, I'm a big fan of ancient civilizations, but also ancient, if I can call it that, ancient animals. What I'm really passionate and inspired by and just really interested in are animals that are thought to be extinct, and then all of a sudden they like reappear and they're rediscovered. Like I will nerd out on that all day long. So there is a just real quick, there is a fish off the coast of southern Africa, South Africa, and like Madagascar, starts with a C. I don't think I'll be able to say the name properly right now. It's like a, I don't know. It starts with a C though. I know that. I've seen a documentary on it. It's really cool. But this animal, this fish was extinct, they thought, for 600 million years or whatever, something crazy like that, and then all of a sudden in the like 40s or something, this biologist from like England or somewhere, he heard that some fisherman was caught this really bizarre looking fish and drew a picture of it. And he went, that can't be, that's a prehistoric fish. And he said, come down to, and then they called him and said, we caught another one, come down to the fish market. And it was dead and he had the specimen and he said, look at this. And everyone was like, what? So, and then they didn't have the technology back then to go diving and find them, but there's a documentary out there, you just have to Google it. But they find them and they find a whole like a school of them, and they're
Wow.
huge, and they look like prehistoric fish, and they are. So similarly, and this has happened many times through history, you could just go and have fun Googling it or ChatGPT it, as I have. The thylacine in Tasmania, also known as the Tasmanian tiger. Check that out. I don't know if you can, like, this isn't the Joe Rogan show. Hey, pull that up, put it on the screen, but listeners, go and Google the Tasmanian tiger. It will blow your effing mind. So I saw this thing like 14 years ago or something on a Google search, and I was like, what? As if that thing's real. So they had pictures of these things from the late 1800s, I think, and the early 1900s, and they were scared of them. The early Australians, not the natives of Europeans, they were scared of them because they were the world's largest marsupial. Oh, sorry, the world's largest carnivore marsupial. So it's
Even
closely
scarier.
related to a kangaroo, but it's got huge fangs and the largest gape of any animal in like modern times. And its gape was like that. It like almost doesn't make sense. And they look like some kind of weird mix between a kangaroo, a hyena, and a tiger and a wolf. Like it's got tiger patterns down the second half of its body. It's got a kangaroo's tail, pretty much. And a wolf's head and a hyena body. It looks like a animorph for anyone who remembers that show, who's also 35 plus. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. So I'm reading more into it. And I'm reading that it's been, it was it the last one was alive in the Hobart Zoo in Tasmania in 1936. Documented, there's video footage of it. Black and white, pacing up and down this fence, them feeding it chicken and stuff, and there's beautiful pictures of them. There's and you, but they were hunted to extinction, unfortunately, by humans. They were given 1 pound per pelt to clear them away because they thought they were killing their sheep, the early farmers in Tasmania. So they were killing them and skinning them, and that was that. Now, There have been very well documented and well reported sightings and different kinds of information, like their SCAT that they're analyzing, and you know, motion sensing cameras that are just catching the back half of them, not only in Tasmania but also in southern South Australia. Apparently, way back in the day, some early hippies, you know, conservationists, you know, they piled a bunch of thylacines, somehow caught them and took them to the mainland and just let them free, knowing that they were going to be hunted to extinction in Tasmania. So there's a lot of stories out there, but there are some really interesting reports, which you can certainly go down a rabbit hole and follow that. So I did, and I went, this is too fascinating. I've got to go. I want to go and film a documentary and interview some of these old people that are old enough to have even seen it in the 1930s, because they were at that time, 10, 12 years ago, they were in their 90s, 80s and 90s. And they're like, oh yeah, they used to be walking down the path, mate, you know, like back of my ranch here. I think they're still out there. Like, I used to see them in the woods back there. And so I thought it was just too fascinating. I had to go. And then on top of that, there was the Tasmanian devil, which is still, of course, alive, although they're a threatened species. And now the Tasmanian devil is the world's largest carnivore marsupial. But they had a facial cancer tumor that was contagious, and it was taking over the population, and it would grow tumors on their face until they couldn't breathe and they suffocate and die. Terrible. And I thought, well, I may not find a Tasmanian tiger, but at least I can raise some awareness to the endangered Tasmanian devils, right? And kind of document how their survival is going and what people are doing to help them or hurt them. Because we interview people in pulp mills, miners, forestry industry. We talk to scientists, doctors, people from the University of New South Wales in Sydney that are looking to clone the thylacine and do different efforts for the Tasmanian devil. We talked to people that have seen the Tasmanian tiger. We even go camping looking for them, setting up cameras, and the rest I won't spoil, but we have a lot of fun along the way too. We're doing cliff jumping, camping, driving around on the wrong side of the road, you know, like as they yeah. do in Australia. So it's an environmental adventure comedy. That's what Walk Like a Giant is. And it was inspired by a Neil Young song called Walk Like a Giant, which talks about, you know, doing the best you can and making a difference in the world, basically is what it is. And you walk like a giant. So that's what I called the film, Walk Like a Giant. And, you know, I'm proud to say that it's being completed right now. And I think I'm even going to go back to Tasmania later in 2025 to actually tie up some loose ends and, like, you know, go back 12 years later. Some of the people I interview aren't around anymore, unfortunately, but, you know, we can definitely go back and see how things have progressed or regressed. We're going to get all of it, and we're going to put it into this film, and hopefully, you know, Netflix or Amazon, and who knows, you know, this is my first film that I've done like this, but, you know, an amazing film crew. I flew down there, spent all my money that I had at the time on this project. And I'm really excited. I'm, you know, it's a passion project, and it's kind of that thing that, you know, that thing that just, it's not done, not complete yet. That's my thing.
Yeah. Well, man, I am fired up to get my hands and watch that documentary when it comes out. I know that there's going to be a cool wrap-up ending with all those, you know, just reconnecting with the community and, like, what are the new findings. And, you know, like, that's like a decade span. So I'm sure that there's a lot that's going to be happening. So I'm just fascinated. I love the old historic animals myself. Like, dinosaurs were my thing growing up. And, you know, I actually went to an exhibit, and they're showing all these, like, prehistoric animals. And I was like, those are really cool as well. So, like, we got the same vibes going with that.
100%. But,
what is the best way for the listeners to get in touch with you and, you know, follow along on the journey?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Dan. I would say to, you know, follow me on Instagram. I'm the only Derek Skoll, DerekSkoll. DerekSkoll.com. It's actually under construction right now, but it'll be up and running in the next week or so. There, you'll be able to find more information about Walk Like a Giant. I have a tab within my website that gives updates, and you can check out little video clips and pictures from that experience. So that's awesome. I've got my coaching link up on there, and also my Grateful PR link, and of course, gratefulpr.com as well. So yeah, that's the best.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you, and this conversation has been incredible as well. I got one last question before we close out here.
Sure.
What has been the greatest lesson or piece of advice received that has made the biggest impact on you?
Really good question. You know, I think that for me, it is that nothing is impossible, and everything in life serves us. You know, everything in life is in service to us, to our greater good, even when it's so hard to comprehend and accept. Trust, have faith that it is in service to you, to your greater good. And when you can feel that and believe in that, you know, the pain, anxieties, fear, it doesn't impact you so negatively anymore. You know, and really accept and embrace it, you know, find a way to surrender to it and have faith, you know, just really have faith in that, you know, the universe conspires in your favor. And so that I think is the best advice I've ever received.
That's so good. You know, we're always making invisible progress, and, you know, sometimes we just have to believe in that a little bit more and trust and have a little bit more faith. And, you know, that can move mountains and get us over the hump that we think we can't get over in that specific moment in time. So I love that as well. We can always, you know, look back and, you know, connect the dots, but when we're in the situation, you know, it's a bit hard. So just view it as a blessing, as I said earlier, like everything's preparing us to get to that next level. So love that takeaway. Derek, thank you for being vulnerable to share your story with us today. Your energy is a gift that shines light on everyone around you, and the world is a brighter and better place because of you. I'm grateful that we crossed paths on this journey, which was not a coincidence, but a divine incident. And I'm super excited to spread greatness and change the world with you. Thank you so much for joining us today, brother.
Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate you. This has been an amazing opportunity to connect with you. You are an incredible human, and your story is extremely inspiring, and I can't wait to have you on my podcast. You're a beam of sunshine, and I really appreciate you. This has been really great, and thank you again.
Man, I'm grateful for you, and let's do it, man. Let's get that in
the books. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Awesome. Thank you so much, man. Super grateful for you.
Yeah, have an awesome day, brother. An amazing week.
Are you ready to take charge of your health and transform your life? Well, get ready, because we have the solution for you. Introducing the NovaFusion 21-Day Wellness and Resilience Challenge, the ultimate program designed to stack massive momentum, achieve peak performance, and spark your transformation. In just 21 days, you can experience a total wellness revolution. Our challenge is jam-packed with daily inspiration, education, downloadable resources, and exciting challenges to keep you fired up and on track. But that's not all. When you join the challenge, you'll also become a member of our exclusive NovaFusion family.
Together, we'll support and uplift one another as we continue to grow and thrive. Unlock the secrets of the world's best wellness and resilience practices to stay mentally and physically fit for a lifetime. From renewing healing practices to transformative high-performance techniques, we've got you covered. And here's something that sets us apart. I believe in these practices so much that I'm offering a money-back guarantee. That's right, if you don't see results, you can get your money back, so you have absolutely nothing to lose, but everything to gain. So what are you waiting for? Take advantage of this limited time opportunity right now. Go to novafusion.co/challenge to sign up and embark on the journey of a lifetime. Let's spark your transformation together. I can't wait to see you on the other side.